Kia ora, and welcome to System Fix, a new podcast from the health media. I am Barbara Fountain, editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. In this podcast, we are going to try and follow the progress in fixing New Zealand's health and disability services system following the release of the Simpson Report. I'll be joined by regular panellists and guests to discuss what's up with the changes and take a look at what we can learn from past restructuring. I can't guarantee we'll always be on top of it, but we're going to give it a go. I started as a health journalist when area health boards were the main game in town. I hoard old reports, possibly because I'm willing the sector to learn from its mistakes. That hasn't happened so far. Many working in the system acknowledge it is broken. It has failed Māori. It has failed the people who work within it. The Simpson Report recognises the failings, but can its recommendations bring the changes called for, and how will that happen? That's what we're hoping to suss out over a series of podcasts. Here with me today are my soon-to-be sort of regular panellists, Gabriel Baker and Tim Tenbensel. Kia ora, guys.
Kia ora, Barbara.
Gabriel, would you like to start by just telling us a bit about yourself?
Sure thing. I'm Gabriel Baker, ngā pui aho, and the thing that gets me out of the bed in the morning is that I want a health and disability system that works for Māori. So for the last 10 or 15 years, I've been doing work in that area in different ways, initially working at the Ministry of Health, and then in the last 3 or so years, working for myself, approaching that question from outside of government.
Thanks. And Tim, a little bit about you.
Sure, thanks. Well, I am an academic. I'm a health policy researcher at the School of Population Health, University of Auckland. And I guess what gets me out of bed in the morning is to teach people and do some research in the area of health policy in New Zealand and elsewhere. I'm really interested in how health systems are organised, so this is great to be doing this. I'm interested in how health policies are implemented. I'm interested in how we work out whether our health system's doing a good job or not. And I am also interested in, you know, just energised by the fact that now there is so much attention in about trying to address inequities between Māori and non-Māori.
Well, that's great. I'm really pleased to have you guys along because although I've been writing and reading about health for a long time, like so many journalists, we skim along the surface and we don't really get into the nitty-gritty details. And I know that the knowledge you guys have is going to really help us get through the next 12 months maybe. So let's get started. We're going to assume that the folks who are listening have had a glance at the Simpson report, but I'm just going to refresh with a few of the key recommendations. So we're looking at a reduction in the number of DHBs and ditching of democracy on those boards, the creation of Health NZ with a 50-50 board of Crown and Māori to sit alongside the Ministry of Health, the creation of a Māori Health Authority to sit along Health NZ and the Ministry of Health, farewell to primary health organisations, hello to localities and primary care and ring fence funding, nationally agreed salary scales to inform contracts, a charter of sorts to get everybody on the same page, and in the area of disability services, funding devolved to DHBs. And to be honest, the area of disability services is something that we'll have to have a closer look at because it's not really my key area. And I think that's one of the criticisms that's come out of the Simpson report. The disability services actually only got quite a small percentage of the, was it 264 pages? So that's a bit of a simplistic summary. So Gabrielle, what prizes did the report hold for you?
Well, I mean, I think I would be remiss to point out the alternative view around Māori Health Authority because it was such a surprise. It was a surprise to see a government-sponsored review have a dissenting minority view presented as the recommendation of the report. So there, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have at least a working understanding of that situation. But the majority of the members and all of the members of a Māori advisory group to the panel recommended a Māori Health Authority that's a little bit different from what's in the final report's recommendations. They recommended one that had a commissioning or funding role that would commission or fund, I guess, Māori health services, whereas the Simpson report talks only about this Māori Health Authority having something like I would describe as a kind of policy-only role with funding that's currently within the Māori Health Directorate of the Ministry of Health only. Mm. So that was my big surprise. There are lots of little surprises within there as well. And I guess probably would point out a little disappointment that I had within it, which is when I read the interim report from the Health and Disability System Review from last year, I started to get a bit of hope what they captured from what people were saying, and in particular what Māori were saying, really resonated with my understanding of the issues and seemed to kind of capture things that I thought, if this is going to address the issues of inequity, the issues of a system that doesn't honour te tiriti or waitangi, this could be exciting. And then what you get in the final report really just doesn't match. Yeah. So there you go. Those are my two things.
Actually, just on that, Tim, in your experiences with health policy, have you ever seen a similar situation with an alternative view coming out at the end of such a major report into government services?
I can't recall one. It's just a very strange phenomenon, really. And it just goes to show that probably the difficulties, the internal difficulties within the review and perhaps within the processes after the review and, you know, sort of which the government would have become involved in actually saying something that's clear. So this is kind of what I agree with, Gabriel. I had a lot of hope with the interim report. I thought, oh, this is a really nice document. It's useful in so many ways. It names the problems quite eloquently. Mm. It gives lots of great data. It pulls together all sorts of stuff from across the sector. You know, the secretariat did a wonderful job, I think, putting that interim report together. So waiting with bated breath for the final report to come out in March. And then, of course, March happens. We get there eventually in June. And I just felt really deflated after a couple of days of looking at it. And it's kind of this sense of the problems defined and the solutions suggested that sort of seem to be in different stratospheres.
It's really interesting because I agree. I really liked the way it summed everything up and gave us a really good picture of how everything was looking and the problems. And people said, oh, there's no answers in here. And I said, well, that's not what it's for. It's actually telling us what all the problems were, which I think even though everyone's heard bits of them, to actually have them all spelled out in one place, really, really beneficial. I think with the alternative view, I was equally surprised also that it was buried so far down in the report, because I have to say I didn't quite read the executive summary. I went straight into the report and then I came across that on, was it page 174, I think. The report itself, and we'll go into this a bit more, but there is a lot of talk of the need to improve services for iwi and hapu and whānau and then the 50-50 breakdown of the board at the Health NZ level. It's just almost like, you know, there's that final step of actually empowering, which hasn't quite happened. But as we know, the report as it stands is just recommendations, and that's something else we'll talk about. What particular big surprises for you in the report?
The situation of primary care or tier one or, you know, primary care within the whole review, given that the initial impetus before things got expanded was that this was going to be a review of primary care funding. So the almost complete absence of discussion on that topic was certainly a surprise. And from my own point of view, I guess, I don't know, I'm really interested in sort of the, you know, how you herd cats. You know, health systems are complex beasts. It's really difficult to get people to work in a collaborative or, pulling in the same direction. Maybe you shouldn't expect it, but if given the challenges that are well known about health sectors and public management generally about just getting people to work together, I was really surprised how little insight there was in the report about those challenges. It's almost like saying, yes, we'll get people to collaborate and we'll make them accountable. And, you know, we know from all sorts of areas, not just health, that if you try and do both of those at the same time, things don't necessarily go that well.
There was talk of a charter, and I must confess when I flipped back through today, I didn't quite find it, a charter that was going to kind of encourage staff to think of the system as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of the charter I find a bit perplexing because I think, I don't know, this is, you know, there's a lot of stuff when you study public policy generally. I mean, one of the starting points is you actually don't necessarily need people to agree on why something's important to do or what the reasons or the values behind doing something, as long as you can get sort of enough momentum behind deciding to do something. You know, starting from common values when, you know, there are inevitably going to be some conflicts. So I think obviously there are some important ones, and I think the focus on te tiriti and the focus on reducing inequities, we are getting close to some sort of consensus on that. But the issue then becomes, what does that mean in practice? And we know from some research that we've been doing into, you know, sort of primary care in the last 10 years, that people use the same phrases all the time, but when you dig into what they mean, they actually mean different things. Mm. And reducing inequities is one of those, I think, topics where it's actually just quite complex. So getting a form of words that everybody can subscribe to, I'm not sure that is going to be that productive.
Mm. So when I think about the point you were just making there, Tim, the thing that strikes me is that the Waitangi Tribunal looked into why the health system wasn't doing the things it aspired to do. Mm. So it was saying the health system says and has said for decades some form of eliminating, reducing, removing inequity is of primary importance. It says that really clearly, but no one's monitoring properly whether that happens. There's no consequences when it doesn't happen. And I don't think, when I saw that charter, I thought, well, that's kind of trying to win hearts and minds, but it's not addressing the problem of lack of performance standards and lack of holding people to those.
Yes, you raise a really important point there that I shouldn't have overlooked, was that the tribunal, the Y2575 report, did come out just before they got started on the Simpson report, and there was a lot of hope that that would inform panel's findings. Any thoughts on that, Gabrielle?
I think that you can see where aspects of the report have. So there is a whole section in the report that talks about changing the legislation, and the kind of things they're recommending there are the same recommendations as the Waitangi Tribunal report. So things like having a clearer equity statement, and things like improving the way that the legislation talks about Te Tiriti or Waitangi and the principles of the treaty and how they apply. So they've taken some bits. There's also the conversation about a Māori Health Authority has become more mainstream because of what happened in the Waitangi Tribunal, because of the Waitangi Tribunal's recommendations. So I think in that way, it's also learned off it. But my overarching view is that the recommendations of the report fail to truly honour the treaty. And you can see that because I don't think it's based on a foundation of mana motuhake, and I don't think it's based on a foundation of rangatiratanga. So before you were talking about how they'd gone some way, but it's like they wouldn't take the final step of trusting this authority to have control. And I think that that's one way to look at it. But the way I look at it is they haven't taken the first fundamental step of accepting that Māori have a legitimate role to play in controlling our own destinies and designing our own systems. In the Waitangi Tribunal whole order report, which was released in 2019, just before the interim report came out, basically. So it had influence over the feedback that the Simpson Review was getting throughout, but also was intended to shape the final recommendations. They were deliberate in the timing of their report, the tribunal. Mm-hmm. So the tribunal identified five principles of the treaty it thought applied to primary healthcare. The first of those was about rangatiratanga. And when the tribunal talks about rangatiratanga, they say that that's Māori self-determination. And they say that that is Māori self-determination in the design, delivering and monitoring of services. They also talk about the principle of equity. And they're requiring the Crown to name equity as its goal. And they pair this with the principle of active protection, which is saying it's not just enough to have equity as this ambition, but you have to put systems and processes in place to actually achieve that equity goal. Mm. And then there's the principle of options, where this has two parts to it in my head. The first is that the Crown needs to ensure all of its services are culturally safe. But the second part of it is that the Crown has to ensure Māori service provision, that kaupapa Māori providers can operate well within the system and thrive within that system. And then there's the principle of partnership. And the tribunal here talks about Māori being the co-designers with the Crown of healthcare services. So when I talk about rangatiratanga and mana motuhake in this context, I'm talking about Māori being partners, but also Māori having self-determination.
Okay, so that is a lot for the people implementing these recommendations to bear in mind. So where we're at now is transition unit has been established. We still don't know exactly which of the recommendations will go forward. There's still to be a advisory board implemented under Section 11 of the Health and Disability Services Act. The new minister, Andrew Little, has made it clear that he wants to see the reforms rolled out quicker than the 5 years that were mentioned in the Simpson report. I'm interested to see that the transition unit is operating out of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Tim, is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, well, it was certainly something of interest when it was announced, when the final report was released. And it is kind of, I mean, it sends a couple of messages. It says, you know, this is high priority for government, and therefore it's not just something that we leave to the line department, the Ministry of Health. I mean, I'm not sure it's so much about not trusting the ministry, but I do think it sort of signals that this needs a lot of political heft behind it. And, you know, if there are implications for other parts of government, then, you know, that will get flagged quite quickly through that sort of process. So, you know, I actually think that's quite a good thing. But, of course, it does create the potential for the health sector itself, or the ministry in particular, to maybe be defensive. Now, I'm not sure that's going to play out that way, given probably the relationships and the people involved at the moment. It may have if we were sort of back in 2017, for example. But I think the people are different now, and so therefore the dynamics might not be so fraught.
So are you referring to the fact that Steve McKernan, who's the head of the transition unit, is a former DG and has worked closely with Dr. Bloomfield?
Yes, I think they would know each other pretty well, and they would know how each other think. And I think, you know, that will sort of mean that communication should be, you know, fairly relatively easy compared to if there are other players in those roles. So I think that's a good thing. The other thing I'd say more generally is that I actually think Stephen McKernan's got, I won't say a blank slate, I just sort of read the recommendations of the review as, you know, one of those ink blot tests, or, you know, you can read into it what you want. And if he thinks that something's important to do or steer, well, I think there's, you can trace anything you want back to the recommendations of the Simpson review, because it's all there, you know.
What do you think, Gabrielle, about Steve McKernan being appointed to that role, given that he is now actually working for a management consultancy, EY? It's a contract position.
To me, it made lots of sense that this transition unit sat within something other than the Ministry of Health, and was probably closer to ministers and the Prime Minister in particular. Cool. So that made sense to me. I do have some concerns, not specifically about Stephen, but about how do Māori engage with this kind of consultant model, or and also if it was just officials too, I would have that same kind of question, that it becomes quite distant and quite alien to lots of people, and it becomes kind of the in crowd and out crowd. I mean, even having a discussion about whether two men get on well is concerning to me about the future of our health system. But it's one that happens all the time and is a legitimate one. It's just, I want better for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems interesting that the advisory board hasn't been appointed yet, because presumably they should be directing Steve McKernan as to what he's doing. I understand that it's been delayed partly because Chris Hipkins didn't want to make the appointment because of the election, and now Andrew Little's obviously getting his feet under the table. Still, it seems like an important thing. Maybe it'll be announced before we get this podcast out.
Yeah.
Maybe. But it was also, I mean, in the absence of a formal advisory group, there's Heather Simpson and Brian Roach giving advice to people who were part of that minority view around the Māori Health Authority. So it's hardly giving them the support of something that was going to champion Māori health in a different way.
So coming up to Christmas, any thoughts about what might be happening next?
Well, for me, I'm kind of happy to sort of look at this from a distance rather than close up, I guess. Up here in Auckland, you know, over the short term, there can be a lot of noise, and you don't really know what's important until maybe a year or two later. So I guess that's the way I think about this stuff. I'm not too fussed about knowing everything that's going on and who's doing what. But I think the point about the pace of it is, you know, I think it's important to note that Andrew Little wants to pick up the pace. And I think it was one of the ambiguities about the report was that when the review panel were out there consulting and talking about what they were doing, they did say, look, we're not going to say what needs to happen tomorrow or next year. We're trying to sort of present or come up with a vision of what things should be like in 5 or 10 years, which is fine. And it's partly, I suppose, what they did. But then there are some very specific recommendations in there that sound like the sorts of things that you'd want to happen pretty quickly. So it's kind of the time frame is really weird in all this. I understand that you can't get everything done tomorrow, but it's quite hard thinking in terms of what, you know, when things should happen by and what are the appropriate timeframes. And I think that was all a bit murky, and I think that goes back to the terms of reference for the review.
Well, the pandemic has shown us that there's some serious problems within our health system, and we can't really wait 5 to 10 years because the impact is on people now, on people today.
Yeah.
That timeframe that Steve McKernan has been presenting at meetings tends to imply that the primary care sector will be first off the rank with regard to the changes, which might surprise some, but I think, Gabrielle, you said the appointment of Don Matheson kind of indicated that we could expect that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that. I sort of anticipated that primary care would be the priority, and it's also been quite a squeaky wheel.
As someone who's been pretty focused on the primary care sector, the end to the primary health organisations to be replaced by localities in what looks like a relatively short time frame. I mean, they've done it before. It will be pretty disruptive. But as Tim mentioned earlier, it actually all comes back to the funding and primary care struggles, not just within general practice, with all primary care providers, Māori and iwi, comes back to primary care funding. And if the report hasn't addressed that, it's a big one for the minister to come into as well.
Well, I don't think you can really do much change. You know, if you go back 20 years when the last big changes to primary care and the creation of PHOs happened, it tends to only happen, you only get big change when you're going to throw a bit more money at things. So, you know, this is not just Aotearoa, this is... You look at the UK and their sort of QOF, you know, quality outcomes framework back in the 2000s. I'm familiar a bit with Ontario, and they made some changes around similar time, and that was smoothed over by paying their GPs a lot more money. And so it seems that it's you can only do this stuff if you're prepared to fork out a bit of money up front. And I'm kind of still picking that that will happen somehow. Somewhere. I think that's sort of, I get a sense that there's some things are being held back for this process to unfold, or some resources are being held back.
So, Gabrielle, is this the big opportunity for health in New Zealand in this century?
I think it still could be the big opportunity, especially when paired with other things that are happening outside of what we would consider the health sector, you know. So there's still potential. It's just I felt a little bit like the Simpson report was already making some compromises before we got a chance to debate them. And one of the things, just to go back to your earlier point about timeframes and how this could, you know, what can happen before Christmas, what can happen within 3 years. I do think that things happen very quickly when there's political will. So that political will extends to whether or not funding can be made available. It extends to how, you know, how many people are supported to work on these things. Sometimes when we go so fast, we pick low-hanging fruit, you know, that kind of expression, and we miss the forest for the trees, to pick another tree metaphor. So, I mean, I'm thinking about, you mentioned disability earlier. So in 2000, my understanding from the cabinet papers of the time and the legislation, disability support services were meant to be devolved then, but we'll come back to that later. We'll just get these things sorted first and we'll do it later. It's 20 years. Yep. So we focus on the things that are easy or a bit more glamorous. And I use, no one can see me, but I'm using air quotes, more glamorous, because there's more mainstream pressure on the government. So they do those things, but don't actually fix the underlying problems. I hope we can move faster than 10 years, but I don't want to go so fast that we just try to get wins on the board without reflecting.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, actually. I think my enthusiasm for seeing a new and brighter future in health is I've been through two lots of reforms, and you just see the same mistakes happening, and it gets a little bit, well, very despondent, actually.
I was reading something that Mason Jury wrote in the 90s, and if you took out the words area health boards, it's the same as today. So he was talking about substantial reforms have been introduced without Māori consultation, without any Marae debate. On one hand, there was hope. And on the other hand, people are dissatisfied with services. But on the other hand, the fundamental issues, and he talks about good housing, employment, educational achievement, were not addressed. So he's talking about the 1991 reforms there. When I read it, I thought, oh, it could be today.
Yeah. Well, I'm really hoping by getting as many people to talk about this as possible that we can actually push things in the right direction. Probably this is a good time now to introduce you to a feature of our podcast, which is the System Fix Quiz. Now, neither of you have got buzzers today, so when you want to answer the question, you just go, me. Right, first question.
Can you name 4 of the 7 people on the Health and Disability System Review Panel?
Me.
Tim.
Peter Crampton. Wynne Bennett. Lloyd McCann. Brian Roche.
Well done.
I only got the men.
Yeah. Margaret Southwick and Heather Simpson.
And Shelley Campbell.
Number two, and this is a new abbreviations which have been introduced by the Simpson Report. What does HIU stand for?
Pass.
That's the Health Infrastructure Unit.
How embarrassing, Tim, that we didn't get that.
I know. Well, you know, it's a bit like sort of, do you want to know about mythical beasts? when they exist, when the unicorn exists, well, we'll start talking about it.
Yes. And there are quite a few of those little abbreviations in there. And the third and final question. So far, Gabrielle, you haven't got any points on the board yet.
No, I've got zero.
There's a chance. How many board members does the report recommend that the new DHBs have, including the chair?
I'm annoyed because I have known this, but it has escaped my brain.
Oh dear, Tim.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I'm gonna punt a number, and I'm gonna say nine. But
nine is right. Eight board members and one chair, and all appointed, of course. We're doing away with elected board members. Okay, guys, well, thank you very much. That's the end of our first system fix, and we'll be back. Well, I'm not quite sure what date yet, but we'll be back soon. Thank you so much. Ngā mihi nui.
Thank you, Barbara.
Ora.
Thanks for listening to the first episode of System Fix. If you would like to keep up to date with changes to the health system, go to nzdoctor.co.nz to subscribe to New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa.